And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
All right, everybody working up. Everybody's working.
With that, time's yours.
Silly us. We thought that if we were going to do a Tuesday podcast, looking back at Monday Night Football and everything else the Kansas City Chiefs had gone through, that if we were going to turn around and do another podcast on Thursday, that we might just not have enough to talk about. That's not the case, because Jordan Love is going to start on Sunday. We'll talk about that here on this edition of Time's Ours, which is brought to you by DirecTV Stream. Get your TV together with the best of live and on demand. Learn more at DirecTV.com. I'm Josh Obriscoe, joined here by Nate Taylor. No Seth Kaiser on this edition, but hope to have him back to break down this game. Nate, never a dull moment, my friends. Been a quick-moving week so far.
I don't know what it is about the middle of an NFL season, because about the first month, Josh, goes according to plan. You know, teams are trying to compete. Everybody's excited. And then, by about Halloween-ish, and as Bobby Stroop said, the matchup we all underestimated, apparently, was COVID versus Halloween.
I didn't see that. That's very funny.
Yeah, shout out to Bobby. But, like, at no point did I ever think we'd watch Jordan Love play football this year, let alone against the Chiefs as his first true start. I've thought about this game a decent bit, but it's just not the same. And I imagine that is such a weird feeling that we sort of got today at the Chiefs facility, just talking about, like, hey, I ain't got no film. We just don't. And so what a bizarre situation. But it's always like, there's a run on injuries that I always hate around this time, just because, ladies and gentlemen, the human body is not meant to play football every 7 days at this level of speed and power. Mm-hmm. And then we just throw Thursday night games in front of you because why? Or a team like the Chiefs, who's been to 3 straight AFC Championship games, is playing Monday night in essentially Sunday afternoon. I mean, it's just, hey boys, 5-day turnaround. That always happens. COVID is still very real out here. As Patrick Mahomes said on Wednesday, we all hope Aaron Rodgers will get through this relatively clean, similar to what happened with Tyrann Mathieu. Although there is a big difference there between...
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. We'll get around to it. We'll get around to the big differences, because this story just gets weirder.
Yeah, it's a bit of a gargantuan difference in the two players. But hey, you still hope for the same end result.
Of course.
I don't know, Josh. I mean, probably for our listeners just as much as us, I feel like there's about 10 things you could probably pick from as to, like, what's most interesting or what's most apparent or needs to be the highest priority now. And I don't think there's really a wrong answer when it comes to this matchup that, weirdly enough, feels like Chiefs kind of got to win it now. Like, hey, would have been nice had you won. Hey, would have been nice had you beat Aaron Rodgers. And maybe that would have signaled a true turning point or an inflection in terms of, like, you know, the ebbs and flows of the season. But now it's like, well, you beat the Giants and you're playing Jordan Love in his first career start in a loud Arrowhead Stadium should probably win that game, right?
Well, you say that there's lots of places you could start. You think it'd all be reasonable. And that, you know, I think that's fair, except for there is one, I think, absolutely above all else place to begin, which I don't even know if you've seen because it broke while you were talking. According to Adam Schefter, Packers officially signed quarterback Blake Bortles to their practice squad.
Mm.
So all this Jordan Love talk has been nice. But if Blake Bortles gets out there, that line has to go back to wherever it was, maybe even farther in the Packers' favor than with Aaron Rodgers. Because I couldn't tell you the last time I saw Blake Bortles lose a football game. Now, I couldn't tell you the last time I've seen him play a football game either. It's been many years. But yeah, no, I mean, it's... Again, there are so many different little angles on this in terms of how we got here, where they go from here. And you know, we've talked to today was coordinators and Melvin Ingram. And then yesterday we heard from Tyrann Mathieu on the defensive side. And all of the questions that you could possibly ask at this point are sort of along the lines of what do you do to prepare for a quarterback in their first start, but also it's somewhere between having the starter get hurt the week before and having the backup just run into the game.
Yeah.
Because Rodgers was definitively ruled out yesterday, like by the Packers, in addition to all of the reports. So on Wednesday, you knew for sure that you were not playing Aaron Rodgers, but were instead playing Jordan Love, which is, I just can't imagine that happens very often. And then so you have, you know, Spags every once in a while will drop the phrase that you plan for the scheme. He said that again today because what else? There's not like a tendency that Jordan Love has shown on tape over the course of a dozen games because he doesn't have that kind of tape. So it's just from a preparation standpoint and also, as you said there, from an expectation standpoint in terms of this pretty quickly shifting from a, hey, Chiefs, surprise me here and I'll feel pretty good. To a, you know what, lose this game to Jordan Love and things are pretty dire front. It has quickly gone from being a really kind of exciting quarterback matchup to being a game that I think you're right to say, like, might now mean a little bit more for the Chiefs, which is kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm. And let's say another statistic that is both real and startling. If the Chiefs win on Sunday, Josh, that will be the first time they've had back-to-back victories all season.
Goodness. Wow. Yeah, yep. That's true. Yep. That's ridiculous.
And startling. You're startled. I can see it. I can feel it.
When was... Wow, okay. At some point, I'm gonna do some... I just try to figure out the last, like, longest stretch of that they would have had because I could not even tell you how incredibly rare that has to be for this team.
Yes.
You know, they haven't lost. When's the last time they lost back-to-back games?
Well, that
it wasn't last year.
Well, that happened. Are you talking about past this season or in previous years?
No, previous years.
Yeah,
so,
because obviously they lost to the Ravens and the Chargers in,
right,
two,
no, I mean,
in week two and three.
Just like to try to, they lost to the Colts and Texans back to back in 2019.
Because of Mahomes' as Seth would say, yeah, he would, you know, he was dealing with the ankle injury at the time, which then inadvertently led to the dislocated kneecap against the Broncos. But yes,
right.
That was a streak where at least you could identify the quarterback wasn't fully healthy, and the defense at the time was still trying to iron the kinks. Under their first year with Steve Spagnuolo.
But that's the last time that they, before this year, had lost back-to-back games. And they did it very late in the season in 2018 also. Chargers-Seahawks back-to-back. But, like, to not be able to win back-to-back games right now really is a startling stat. And would, again, you understand that where the Chiefs stand in the division right now, that all these divisional games count as, like, a game and a half. Because there's just a lot of... An AFC West team is going to get a wild card spot, I think almost certainly. Because either the Raiders, Chiefs, or Chargers, one of those teams is going to win the division, obviously, even though the Chiefs and Broncos are tied right now. But one of those teams is going to win the division, and then one of those teams is going to get out of the scrum in more or less one piece, I think. But to just be able to win back-to-back games and to have Jordan Love to be the guy to get through at quarterback, it's not quite Daniel Jones and the Giants. This is a better football team, and they barely got through the Giants. But it just sort of feels not like a must win. I think that's probably a little too strong and was definitely true last week. But a you really would like to get out of here with it, because then if they go to the Raiders next week in primetime and lose, you're talking about a 4-6 football team.
Yeah.
That's way back in the division if that happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, wild. You know, go out there and get a dub. I really get the sense, and you were sitting right next to me, Josh, in the press conferences today on a gloomy, but now, you know, sun's starting to show itself.
Peeking through.
Here on a Thursday afternoon. I waited till the very end because there was some other stuff that was going on in the Steve Spagnuolo portion of today's news conference. Uh-huh. But I asked him, I said, hey, if you don't have any tape on this kid and they really have never ran through a full game operation with him before, and that is a true statement. Like, yes, he ran some plays in preseason. That is not the same as we're in week 9 of an NFL season. Because let me tell you, Jordan, King moves real fast, man. Real fast. So if you know these two things, is it appropriate for you to blitz this man in a nature that you necessarily wouldn't if it was a veteran superstar quarterback, i.e. Aaron Rodgers? Mm-hmm. Steve Spagnuolo basically said, well, in the old days, in 1990s, early 2000s, when quietly they weren't letting quarterbacks run the ball.
Yep.
You could do that. That was just a guarantee. Like, yep, first time starter, blitz him to death. Now, I think this is my opinion and theory. He is setting this up to do exactly that.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Steve Spagnuolo never said we're not going to blitz him, but he also never said we are going to blitz him. He was just saying, hey, I understand your question, Nate. You might be onto something. Here's what I'm going to do. We used to do that, but hey, we gotta defend the scheme. And hey, that Devontae Adams guy is good, and so is Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon. Like, they're great. I want to see what the first 3rd-and-7 is.
Yeah.
Because I'd be bringing just about everyone. Because, hey, either you get there or Devontae Adams scores regardless. I mean, like, what's what is really the difference? I feel like for the Chiefs, this is a, hey, by the way, Anthony Hitchens appears to be trending towards playing. He did practice today. So did Colin Saunders. It appears that just about everybody on defense is, again, relatively healthy and able to be in the lineup. So with that as a strength, go out there and blitz this man to death.
First of all, if people haven't followed up on Jordan Love's career, generally speaking, he was perfectly happy to run the ball every once in a while, really pretty frequently, actually, at Utah State. He had 81 carries his junior year there. That's wild.
Yeah.
So he ran the ball frequently, not a lot. I don't know how many of those were like designed runs or successful scrambles, because he wasn't Lamar Jackson by any means. He wasn't running for 6 yards a clip.
Yes,
but,
right.
Is athletic, is happy to move around whenever he needs to. I thought that Spags's note on that, to take both sort of your conspiracy theory and sort of Spags at his word, I do think there is something really interesting about, like, yeah, it's not as easy to just blitz the young quarterback as it would be if Mac Jones was back there, you know, or first year Matt Stafford, right? Like, you know, if you want to go olden days, I don't know if Matt Stafford quite, that's probably about right. That was, in some ways, you would see extra disguises from defenses going up against a young quarterback and try to bait them into mistakes and stuff. But specifically blitzing, if you have a quarterback that can make you pay for that with their legs, then it becomes a little bit riskier. To your point, though, maybe that makes them a little less willing to blitz on 3rd-and-4 if they're, you know, preparing for a potential pass there.
Yeah, or a screen. Right. Or a screen, boys.
Oh,
or a screen.
I'm just going to put that in a separate little category that I want to come right back to, because hey, we'll see.
Yeah, if Legarius Sneed ain't making that tackle, then it's Nick Bolton 10 yards past the line of scrimmage, unfortunately.
That's right. That's right. But I think that if you get that little third and seven, it, God forbid for him, it's third and 10.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Sorensen is going to be on that field. And if you can have him running forward or running backwards, I'd prefer the former. Just let him go. Let Dan Sorensen go chase Jordan Love around. See what happens. I just don't know. I don't feel like I know what to expect from him. But I, to your point, I do think we have a pretty good idea about what to expect from the offense. If you want to go back to the last Chiefs-Packers game, it is the game definitively for me that I just continue to have flashbacks to any time a running back is catching a football against the Chiefs. I feel like they've been chasing that game personnel-wise ever since then. Also, it was the last time we were supposed to get Mahomes and Rodgers and ended up with Matt Moore and Aaron Rodgers because of the aforementioned kneecap issue, which is one of the bummers out of this. It's a break for the Chiefs, no question, but kind of a bummer from a football-watching perspective. But you mentioned the screens. You mentioned the running backs. Also, obviously, Davante Adams, I would not hesitate to keep him in your fantasy lineups, folks. I think Jordan Love is going to find 17 and go to him probably approximately 17 times.
Bubble screens, slants, crossers. Hey, can you do the Mecole Hardman jet sweep pop pass? End arounds. There's so many ways to get this man the ball. That the Chiefs are going to have to be very alert. But hey, maybe Matt LaFleur will use Davante Adams as a decoy, which means he should definitely be fired if he does that on Sunday. Like when you say something out of your mouth, you're like, nope, he should be fired if he does that. Sorry I took you guys on a journey there, but
make him a decoy so you can target once again Mercedes Lewis, who is not only still in the league, I think had a touchdown against the Cardinals. I think it's when we all or had a catch. It was almost a touchdown on Thursday night.
Really? Yeah. Hey, Randall Cobb is like a legit number two option.
That's true.
Which is weird to say, but it's true. Now is that true because Aaron Rodgers is throwing him the ball, or is that true because he is playing consistently? I will give him credit, but obviously, as a receiver, you are dependent upon the quarterback to service you in the right manner. We'll see what that happens with Jordan Love. But look, they have real options, real weapons. Mm-hmm. One could argue they have maybe if everybody we assume plays because you know COVID. If everyone is out there, one could argue that the Packers have the better collection of skill position players on offense. And when was the last time we said that about the opponent of the Chiefs, Josh?
It's been a very long time. I don't know when that. I mean, I don't know how many teams I would argue that about in any form.
I think the last team you could argue that about based on the timing and then finally getting in stride was probably the Buccaneers in Super Bowl 55. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Chiefs fans, but I mean that team, that offense was humming. And it took them a quarter. I will give Spagnuolo credit. It took them a quarter. But once they sort of figured out what all the Chiefs could do, then they were basically a bus off. It did help. Yes, I'm gonna acknowledge it. It did help that it was a home game, sir and ma'am. Yes. The officiating was kind of shaky. Mm-hmm. But maybe that's the last time.
I'd like to just give you a real quick Mercedes Lewis statistic here, if you don't mind. In the first round of his draft, also selected were Vince Young, Jay Cutler,
yes,
Matt Leinart,
wow,
Tom Bahali,
the only guy in that first round. Birthday.
Yesterday I think. Shout out to happy birthday, Tom Bahali. As of the first round, the only other player that even played last year was Jonathan Joseph. Not playing this year, apparently.
And he was still getting paychecks, y'all, because, hey, sometimes you can just get paychecks knowing where you got to be. I mean, I used to watch him on film and just marvel at, like, he knows he's athletically at a decline, and that dude is still not bad.
Devin Hester was drafted in this draft. Here's my last stat from the Mercedes Lewis /2006 NFL draft class. The Jags took him in the first round, and in the second round took Maurice Jones-Drew.
Yeah, baby.
He retired after the 2014 season.
Playing running back is hard, kids.
It's tough. That is tough. Chiefs took Bernard Pollard in the second round that year.
Wow. And what is Bernard Pollard mostly known for?
Destroying Tom Brady's knee.
And ruining how to play defense in this league for decades.
Yes. Forever breaking what it means to tackle a quarterback.
Yep.
Unbelievable. Okay, I'm closing that page. We can go back to talking about the actual, you know, task at hand here.
That was a exciting memory lane.
It really is. I love, there was a tweet going around a while back that was something like, dudes will just start reading the Wikipedia page of any NFL draft and talk about it for 30 minutes. And then it really, that tweet really felt like an attack on exactly who I am. Because I just love so much, like, 2006 NFL draft, Mercedes Lewis and Maurice Jones-Drew, what? Mercedes Lewis is from a different era. Nope, he's still playing football. And will catch a touchdown in the middle of the field, standing 1 inch behind the goal line on Sunday. I just feel pretty confident in that.
Yeah. Another question I'll just throw out to our audience. Are you willing to play base for the majority of this game? Because if you do, if you do, Steve Spagnuolo, Anthony Hitchens, based on my understanding, will replace the Ben Neiman snaps. And if you stay in base or nickel, Dan Sorensen really not on the field? This is the first time all season you could competently say, maybe we have the best 11 defenders on the field all at the same time. What a novel concept. Yeah. It only took 9 weeks.
Yeah, that, you know, I hadn't given that any thought really, but yeah, I mean, I think you're right. That is an option. You have your entire pass rush. We talked to Melvin Ingram today. We'll see if he plays it. Everyone has been noncommittal about it, which is understandable. You know, Andy Reid said yesterday, you don't want to put a player in a bad spot. I get it. Also, they traded a sixth round pick for a dude whose clock is ticking in terms of how much time they are going to have him for. But
yes,
whatever. We'll see. It would be fabulous for them to have their best four defensive linemen, their three, I was going to say actually good linebackers, like genuinely good.
Yeah.
Hitchens has had plenty of issues this year, it seemed, but certainly their best three linebackers, mm-hmm. their actual two best safeties, and probably Snead and Ward, I would guess, although I think, I never saw the snap counts for Monday night in terms of if Ward outsnapped Fenton this time.
Yeah, I'll double check that. I believe that to be a case where they fully put Ward back as a full-time starter and you know, didn't really give up anything of note when he was out there. But yeah, I think you're right. But I'll double check that here in a minute.
Yeah, I might stumble into it here as well. Oop, I searched Chiefs Giants snap counts on Twitter, and then I got a tweet from Matt Derrick from 2017. So here, Chiefs defense, we're just playing memory lane today because Seth's not here. Frank Zombo, Marcus Peters, Ron Parker all played 100% of the snaps. Dan Sorensen played all but one.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, Rashad Fenton had 38 snaps, 63%, with Ward back at starting position doing 57 of the 60 snaps, which was 95%.
Okay, sorry. Give me those numbers one more time.
So, again, you're starting to see the shift. Right. Tyrann Mathieu was the only defender, by the way, who played all 60 defensive snaps, which, by the way, that's the snap count you want, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. Like, you don't need them to be out there 70 to 75 times. L'Jarius Sneed had 59. Tre'Davious Ward had 57, so 95%. And then basically, however you want to distinguish it, Sneed is technically the first nickel cornerback. You know, obviously he slides inside when Fenton's on the field based on personnel wise, but based on the snap count, Fenton was the nickel. He was on the field 38 times or 38 snaps for 63%, the same amount as Willie Gay.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
So do you, since we're on sort of defensive personnel, what do you expect the linebackers to look like? Because Spags talked about that a little bit today.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that they will try to stay in base a little more often and keep all three of those guys out there? And then maybe even more interestingly at this point, what do you think happens when they do just go to one or two?
Yeah, it'll be fascinating because I've always felt, and this is part of like trying to get from the coaching perspective, which again, if you're willing to criticize a certain player or coach, like try to see it from their vantage point. The reason why I bring this all up is because I think this is the first time where Spagnuolo can't be schemed into something so easily. For instance, when the Buffalo Bills spread it out, four and five wide receivers, if you're not going to play Armani Watts, we are schemed into playing Daniel Sorensen, which then leads to, you know, being exploitable. With the linebackers, I do think because of his veteran status and his leadership, Anthony Hitchens will probably resume the middle linebacker role. There was a question today with Spagnuolo that says, hey, you know, and it might have been our buddy Mac Dirk.
Yeah.
Do you slide Hitchens to the Sam and keep Bolton in the middle? And then obviously Willie can be your fly around wheel linebacker. And that's an interesting thought. But Spagnuolo didn't really give much to it other than say, we'll think about it. But when he says, I'm just thinking about that now, which means it probably not going to translate itself to the field Sunday, which I always enjoy that where like we as reporters can, and it's just like everyday life. Somebody asks you a question and you're like, huh, well, I hadn't really thought about it, or like, it puts me kind of on the spot, or like I wasn't necessarily thinking in that same way. Well, we do that from time to time. And so it's just funny to see, like, you know, these coaches and players are human. But I do get the sense that it'll probably be Bolton at the Sam. The question then becomes, what do you do at Buffalo, which is basically their nickel package? Mm-hmm. And Willie Gay's got to be on the field.
Yeah.
I don't really care what you do with the other two. Like, from an experience standpoint, it's probably going to be Hitchens. Because the Packers are very good at using motion and pre-snap movement to sort of change some things for the defense. So you would assume, and again, you would assume the person quicker to translate that, respond accordingly, would be Hitchens, the veteran player. Although everyone in that facility has been quite amazed and impressed by Nick Bolton's ability to translate information to his teammates and within himself very quickly. And then he's not making the play because of a mistake. He's making the play because it's physically hard to be a linebacker in the NFL based on his size and what his physical limitations are. So again, one would assume it'd be Hitchens, but I get the feeling, Josh, you would probably go the other way.
Well, it's interesting. I just pulled this tweet back up to get the quote exactly right, and then I found a terrifying thing to see on any tweet, which is 93 quote tweets, because usually that means that you're getting ratioed in public. but in this case, it's just people retweeting it to say that they're unhappy. I'm not even – here's the thing. Hitchens is absolutely at least the third best linebacker on this team. Like, that is, I think – extremely, that's a
layup. You can especially say that too when you would think with more playing experience, more different looks, obviously playing what we assume to be superstar quarterbacks, that Bolton and Gay would improve as the year went on, where you're just trying to maintain the top form that is already fully developed within Anthony Hitchens.
Yeah, and with Ben Neiman as well. Like, just as, you know, guy that has a role but should be the role as your fourth linebacker. So Spag said, Hitch to me, he's the guy that smooths everything out, which I think is kind of interesting. And because Spag talks about Hitchens that way all the time. And the defense has not looked smooth at any level with him out there, which I just think is sort of interesting.
Yep.
And his exact phrase in response to Matt Derrick's question was, I don't know if we'll go that route. When asked if Hitchens could move to Sam, which is him just saying no, but it, saying no to a question like that is rare. So there, it's just, I don't know if we'll go that route. I think that your hunch for what I would do is correct. I think I would rather just if the difference in play is going to be minimal, the tie goes to the young guy for me in terms of what you're hoping to see. I'd rather see Nick Bolton in the middle of this defense the rest of the year, because that's where he's going to be at the start of next season. Or if he ends up actually in over his head, which he does not appear to be right now, he's still not good in coverage, but that's okay. Like, you know, we all know that. If he ended up looking in over his head or got picked on by quarterbacks later this season, I'd want to know that before I was making the decision to cut Anthony Hitchens this offseason. Obviously, Willie Gay has to be on the field. He and Nick Bolton both have both the upside and the current actual physical tools to make an impact. I know that might sound sort of cliche or like faint praise, but when is the last like obvious impact play that you remember Anthony Hitchens making? There might be one in the last few weeks that I'm glossing over, but it seems like he's on the field sort of in that role of like, he knows the defense, he'll help everyone get into position and all of that. But much like some of that logic ended up applying to Daniel Sorensen, and Anthony Hitchens is a better linebacker than Dan Sorensen is a safety right now, I'm going to just say that. But much in the same way that Dan Sorensen gets put out there because he's smart and he knows the defense, he knows where he's supposed to be. But then whenever he's not those things, you go, well, why is that guy playing? Because it's not for his foot speed anymore. I'm not all the way there with Hitchens, but if it ends up taking Willie Gay or Nick Bolton off the field right now, that's a hard one for me to argue in favor of.
Well, a little counter argument would be there were times, maybe not this season, but there were times when I always felt like Anthony Hitchens' best attribute was reading the quarterback and understanding that, oh, that's a screen. And, oh, I can go make sure that it's a minimal gain. Mm-hmm. There are a few times where he actually would make plays in the backfield. And Anthony Hitchens is very good at blitzing, which they haven't done a ton with him necessarily this year. Now, some of that is because he had the injury, I think in the second quarter of the Washington game, when the Chiefs originally signed Anthony Hitchens, they thought he'd be a three-down linebacker, and then that was proven to not necessarily be the case. So he's a two down linebacker who can play three downs if you need to, based on whatever else is available to you. But you're right. I mean, we're on to maybe the precipice of how long can he maintain this, both physically and from a, you know, performance standpoint. And then obviously there's going to be a slight decline or a more harsh decline, i.e. mm-hmm. Daniel Sorensen. So you're right to bring this up. And I think most fans will probably agree with you that, hey, let's see what the young kids can do. You know, I wrote about this after the Washington victory because it was very evident that, like, oh, the reason why the defense played today was because of the younger players, not because of the older. Right. We pay you a lot. You are supposed to be the leaders and generally the guys that, you know, generate the notable statistics. It honestly might be better for this unit if the trend is the young kids get better as the season goes along and you just see it week after week after week, them becoming more of a quote-unquote unit together. And then the older guys still maintaining disciplined eyes, having the right leverage, being communicative with their teammates. If the ball comes to them, making a play. And that's something that, you know, Tyrann Mathieu talked about on Wednesday. The idea of like, hey, maybe I was forcing it. Maybe I was trying to do too much. And I think there were some snaps against the Tennessee game where he was like, you know what? F it. I'm blitzing.
Right.
I'm tired of this. And then Ryan Tannehill was like, thank you. Boop. Right over your head to a bubble screen that goes for 9 yards. And guess what? It's now second and one. You know, it's like one of those sort of things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Tyrann Mathieu to be disciplined enough to obviously trust Juan Thornhill. But if the ball does come your way, or if there is a tip ball, make the correct play. Get the interception. If there's a tackle to be made ahead of the goal line, just do it. Don't give up and let the guy necessarily go in. That's probably where this defense needs to be heading. Unless. And I'm going to say this real quiet. Because, guys, I don't know if I'm ready to trust it. But what if they could get pressure with four?
Oh, my God.
Just what if? What if?
Yeah, and what if it started raining gumdrops tomorrow? Nate, what are we living in a fantasy world?
I'm just gonna read you a stat, okay? It's not from me. It's from PFF, okay? Pro Football Focus.
Yeah, that's short for Pro Football Focus.
Frank Clark's game against the Giants on Monday was the best of his career, a 91.7 grade. Is the highest of any game he's ever played in the NFL. What if he's
tripping? If I've said it once, I've said it a million times, Nate, you can't trust those analytics.
But what if, as Seth has told me, and go to his Twitter account, go to his newsletter, he clipping them out with the plays, he's starting to show speed and power. And Chris Jones will play the majority of his snaps inside. Multiple people in the organization have told me this, and Melvin Gordon's a human body that could beat a one-on-one, right?
Did they also trade for Melvin Gordon? I told them not to add any linebackers.
Melvin Ingram, damn it.
Running backs. I screwed up also. I had a chance to dunk on you. You were under the basket, and the ball left my hand too soon. I smacked it off the back of the rim.
So you're not going to treat me like LeBron James treated the Jet?
No. I'm going to treat you like LeBron James right now. Like I've got, like I just strained my abs. I think it's an abdominal injury, right?
I mean, quietly, guys. I don't know if you love LeBron James or not, but guys, it's going to be sad. We're here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're here now. Like, maybe you hope for like one more Larry Bird, like out of nowhere, he still like mesmerizes you in maybe May? June is another thing. I mean, it's just, it's going to be hard. They're so old. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that I think I might have mentioned this one of the recent episodes, but whenever Frank Clark came to the podium and spoke to us for the first time since
week two,
right? Okay, yeah. He talked about all the hamstring stuff. And the timeline of it all, I think I mentioned this on the podcast at some point already, but worth mentioning again.
Yeah.
where he was like, yeah, I kind of got my training camp legs and then my hamstring got yanked. And then I tried to rest a little bit and then I heard a pop and then I had to end up waiting a lot longer. And now I'm kind of fully getting back up to speed. Him actually, look, I'll play the part of Seth here for this line. The money is already spent. And the conversation that we'll have about his contract this offseason is going to happen regardless of how this year goes. And he's probably going to get paid by both the Chiefs and someone else after this season, if I continued to have to guess. But the idea that he would be hitting his 2021 stride just now makes total sense to me. Like, just sort of hearing his explanation of where his legs have been, I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it makes a ton of sense. And look, Chris Jones said after the game on Monday night that he probably won't be 100% for the remainder of the year. And yep. Unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, we didn't get to ask like the natural follow-up, which is like, I never like asking players, but like, what are you at? 78%, 89%, right. 88%, 87%? Like, just not
what percent do you think you're at right now
at this point? Not your head. 86%. Well, you know, Josh, it's a next man up mentality. These games come and you got to be ready. I get in there and I get my treatment. I'm a professional at this. You know, it's week. What are we in week nine? We're in week nine, yeah. Right? I mean, yeah, who do we got this week? The Packers. I'm so focused on taking care of my body and eating right and sleeping well and not making rash decisions. You know, with all that said, I'm about 57% right now.
Oh wow. And, oh no, we gotta get you a bye week ASAP.
Yeah, I mean, look, veteran guys know how to get through it.
That's true.
You know, true. I'm not saying I'm out here making business decisions, but my business is getting handled. So, you know, the trainers will get me right. I'll get in that gym. I'll get nice and loose before kickoff, and you know, hope that my 75 is better than their 75.
I think I'm probably about 68% because if I was just a little better, I'd be nice, but I'm not quite there. So, I think about 68% at this point. Was there anything else from the pressers today that you thought was interesting that caught your eye that I don't know if you're planning on writing again before mm-hmm. the game? I imagine you probably will be.
Yes. I'll write something defensive related that hopefully will be on The Athletic by the time most listeners hear this. But yeah.
Well, good. We've already covered most of the defensive mm-hmm. stuff, I think, at this point. I did have one other thought defensively.
No, go for it.
Sort of interesting. That you mentioned that, I think, I don't remember if you asked Tyrann Mathieu about this or if we just talked about it. Somebody asked him about it. Might have been you. Who's to say? I'm going to say it was you because it was a nice question. He tweeted about how like he's, which by the way, Tyrann Mathieu tweeted, not a scary sentence in the time of this episode. We're okay. But Mathieu tweeted about how like eventually the ball's going to find him, can't avoid him forever and all of
yep.
that.
Yep.
And I was just thinking about that again. Then after somewhere right later, then I asked Tyrann Mathieu.
Yes, it was me. And we comboed him. We combo blocked him.
Let's go. We combo blocked him on a good little playmaking. No wonder I thought it was so interesting. You and I asked the questions. It's pretty wild if both of us asked those questions. And I was like, that was very interesting.
Look, fans, I know we're not in the locker room. You're not getting as much information. But look, when me and Josh put our hand in the dirt, just know we're pushing. A Tyrann Mathieu when we get the opportunity to.
That was one of those plays where, like, you clearly did all the work, but I'm going to get credit for the sack because I got there second, you know? It's like you took on a double team and completely flooded the pocket in, and then I was Jaron Reed sort of just hopping through going, oh, you know what? Yeah, I'll clean up. But I think that whole line of questioning and everything is very interesting because not that it's anything that Mathieu is or isn't doing, but what I asked him to follow up of was sort of in that balance of like, hey, how do you play safety in the put out fires sort of do your job department? And how do you balance that with wanting to be the guy that goes and creates the big play and turns the ball over, gives it back to your offense? Because that's something I was going to actually pull this up before the podcast and I forgot about it today. But I'm quite sure that the Chiefs front seven has more interceptions this year than their defensive backs do. And their defensive backs haven't been like any sort of atrocious. There's been some issues, but I just think it's interesting that it seems like this defense has sort of hoped it would set a certain floor, or and then maybe the pass rush would be able to create some just 50-50 balls or misthrown passes that then they can pick off. But they have not been very good at sort of interceptions in the more traditional sense. And I wonder if that's by design, if that's something by accident, but certainly it's something that they really need to figure out. Also, more news here. DeSean Jackson unclaimed on waivers today.
Fire
not free to sign with any team.
Fire it up!
Or
it's already been fired up. Now
the fires are simmering.
Now look, the Chiefs have 6 interceptions this year. The leading landlords, if you want to use that term, are really gay and Tyrann Mathieu. Now, Tyrann Matthew's 2 interceptions came in the first half of half that he played all season against Lamar Jackson. And look, one of them was, hey, he was in the right space. Sammy Watkins fell down. Hey, as I mentioned earlier, that's what we're asking the veterans to do right now. Be in the right space. If the ball comes to you, you know what to do with it. Guess what, kids? Tyrann Mathieu got it in the end zone. And then the second one was him kind of getting to your point, Josh, which was it was still within the framework of, when I look at the All-22, it was still within the framework of the call from Spagnuolo, but he slightly freelanced, knew where Lamar Jackson, or he sort of predicted where Lamar was going to go with the football, and then he intercepted it. He made a play. It's been tougher to do that because I think opposing quarterbacks, most notably Josh Allen, never threw a ball near this man's way. Mm-hmm. So he's going to have to struggle and battle with that. But again, that sort of ask the younger players to, again, be competent so that maybe he can make a play or two. Tershawn Wharton has an interception. Remember when Mike Hughes saved the season on week one? Against a healthy Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, no kidding. I did. Boy, I forgot about that completely.
Boy, does the season change. Because
No kidding.
Mike Hughes. Man, it's tough. It's tough to play in this league. And that's no slight to him. It's just, it's really hard. Like, you can have a good training camp. You can have a good preseason, which he did. You can play relatively well. It's hard. The Browns really schemed some things up nicely that obviously there was no way for Mike Hughes to really prepare for it because it was the first game of the season and they had no film of what to go on with the new concepts that the Browns were sort of developing all offseason. But he sort of, you know, his play sort of eroded as the season's gone along here. Willie Gay might lead the team in interceptions this year just because he's a young, athletic, can read the quarterback eyes, and we realize, Josh, he doesn't have stone for hands.
Yes.
So I think to Tyrann, here's a little journalism one-on-one trick. Sometimes you want to show the player that you are knowledgeable and cognitive or cognizant of them knowing that, hey, I shouldn't have said some of the things I said on Twitter. I shouldn't have said some of the things I said on Instagram. And you're like, hey, man, I got it. I know. But you also said this on Twitter.
Yes.
And we can actually discuss this.
Yes.
So let's discuss it. Just take that with you. You know, if the Zoom meeting isn't going well, there's always a way to sort of, you know, transition in an appropriate manner. And then if you got a good teammate, like Josh, then they're ready to go. In addition to that, what about this? And now we're off.
And now we're all in a much friendlier place. And we
exactly.
can just talk about creating turnovers, you know?
By the way, inside sports journalism. That is the job. The job is to literally say, that was this. You get it. I get it. And we are adult and responsible and well-researched enough to ask you appropriate questions in this setting. Yeah. To where, hey, maybe there's some respect, some honesty, and some truth that comes across both sides. And ladies and gentlemen, we got that on Wednesday. We really did. So I applaud everybody involved. Me, Josh, and Tyrann.
We didn't get quite as much from Melvin Ingram today. If you want to talk about the defense on one. We didn't get anything from Melvin Ingram today, but I enjoyed it, if that's possible.
Hey, his first performance as a member of the Chiefs went swimmingly, you know? He's really focused. He's ready to go to work. I think the thing that we learned, but it wasn't said verbally, but just like, hey, and I'm gonna write this, but like, hey, it's better to admit fault and just say, hey, like, now we can make it work. So the Chiefs should have signed him, or should have done more to convince him to sign. Excuse me. They should have done more to convince him to sign.
Sure.
And hey, you know, even though he didn't say he was a hostage, and even though Mike Tomlin called him a hostage because he ain't a volunteer, at least, you know, Melvin Ingram was like, can I not be either? Can I just get out of here? And so credit to him for understanding the situation, not trashing the Steelers just as he got inside the Chiefs building. I think he knows, man, I can have some real one-on-one opportunities. And for whatever reason, the Steelers and him just, whatever, they didn't mesh, or they were asking him to do more than just, hey, go beat your man one-on-one. And I think for Steve Spagnuolo, that's all you got to tell him is you're going to play maybe 50% of the snaps, maybe 60% if we really get this thing cooking. But, like, situationally, beat your man one-on-one, especially if everybody else stays healthy, that being Chris Jones and Frank Clark.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about the offense some, because we also heard from Eric Bieniemy today, not that he's necessarily diagramming plays for us or anything at the podium. We heard from Mahomes yesterday and Andy Reid yesterday. On the offensive side, I mean, it's so strange because the Chiefs won last week, but they put up 20 points against the Giants defense that no one thinks is particularly great. The Packers defense is pretty good. It's just not what leads that conversation ever for that team. What are you feeling right now in terms of what the Chiefs are going to be going up against? Because I'll give you my score prediction for this game later in the show, but I probably should have tried to remind myself of the fact that they held the Bengals to 22 points. Just on Thursday, they held the Cardinals to 21. Like, a couple really good offenses they've gone up against have been held in the very low 20s.
Yeah.
They haven't given up more than 28 points all year.
And it's wild because...
Sorry, other than week one. Jameis Winston took him to class.
Yeah.
And then after that, they didn't give up more than 28.
Yeah, because I do remember that 49ers game early in the year where that kind of, you know, again, it's sort of one of those pivotal moments in the season where Aaron Rodgers sort of saves the defense, and then the following week, the defense, you know, kind of does its job, and then you got some real momentum on both sides. You know, when you watch them, and this was definitely the case on Thursday night, like, is there a T.J. Watt on the field? No. Is there an Ed Reed? No. I mean, they just took a guy off the Cardinals practice squad and threw him out there. They are solid, and they are opportunistic. And ladies and gentlemen, if that doesn't hit you right in the chest as a Chiefs fan, because that's all you're asking your defense to be. Solid, opportunistic. I also get the sense, too, that the Chiefs are going to have to continue to use misdirection plays, or at least show something pre-snap to help Mahomes, to help the offense get moving. But look, I asked Eric Bieniemy today, and you were there for it as well, Josh. Like, they got to get Travis Kelce going, but we're kind of in the middle of the year, and he's clearly banged up and gutting it out, being a you know football warrior. But I'm fascinated to know how they will try to scheme up Kelce for the middle of the field, because that should help any quarterback, let alone a superstar in Mahomes that's in a bit of a slump. And again, I have no idea who's going to be the running back. Like, I have no idea if it should be Derek Gore. I have no idea if you should trust Darrell Williams, which, again, not necessarily a criticism. It's just, I don't know. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, by the way, has not practiced this week, so it appears that he will at least miss this game, which will be his fourth straight, and we'll see if he is able to return to practice next week. That'll be something that I ask Andy Reid tomorrow on Friday. just to see if there's any update there from the training medical staff perspective. But those are the two things for me, Josh, is like, can Travis Kelce sort of, I won't say necessarily get back on track, but can he be a more viable option? Because that was one of the more surprising things about the Giants, if you don't consider like that his body might be a little bit beat up and maybe he needs another week to get through things. And then secondly, they're going to have to run the ball. They're going to have to be balanced. But who are they actually handing the ball off to? Because, and by the way, is Jerick McKinnon on the team anymore? I don't even see him. I mean.
His most impactful play last week was made with his face mask, and then the Giants caught it.
Oh, to be fair, I did see him at practice today. But I haven't seen him. Where's he at? I don't know. Does anybody mention his name? I don't think Eric Bieniemy mentioned his name once.
Yeah, I don't think so.
So
Patrick Mahomes yesterday was talking about that play.
And he said that he threw it too hard.
He said he threw it too hard to Josh Gordon, and then it hit the other guy.
Did not mention his name.
He didn't say his name.
I mean, was he out there? Is he out there? Where is it? Where's McKinnon?
So weird.
Does McKinnon have a helmet?
It makes so much sense. Bizarre.
Yeah, and by the way, Jerick McKinnon, the more veteran player of anyone available in the running back group.
And instead, Derek Gore got 5 straight clutch carries and ended up in a touchdown last week, who you probably had never heard of unless you were at training camp at the beginning. Like, just, it's insane. It's ridiculous. Yeah. Wild time.
Also, can anybody other than Tyreek Hill get open? That'd be so nice.
That was going to be my question. The Travis Kelce thing is obviously a good point, but if teams are going to just absolutely devote themselves, mind, body, and spirit to making sure that Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce just stop having fun with the sport of football, somebody else has to get open. And so this is the question that I will ask you, Nate, and I believe I've asked you this question every week for what feels like months now, even though it definitely hasn't been that long. Is this the week for Josh Gordon? Fool me 7 times, shame on me. Or if not, who is it? This is why Josh Gordon continues to be so alluring here.
Yes.
Because if you say no, then I'm going to say, well, then is it the week for DeMarcus Robinson? And you're going to go, I mean, not really. Just what it means. Mecole Hardman? I mean, not really. Like, he's a very talented football player, but he's not going to, you know, be Sammy Watkins or whatever.
Oh,
so can it be Josh Gordon?
We've reached the portion of the podcast where I now must read you a paragraph in theathletic.com.
Yes!
Now, this is across all teams, so this is a fun experiment if you got time, or fun experience, I should say, if you have time. But each reporter of each NFL team was asked to say, hey, I'll raise my hand. Some of my predictions when I reread them at the beginning of the season are just, whew, they're bad. But hey, I didn't know Chris Jones was going to have a wrist injury. I thought he'd get 15 sacks as a defensive end. Anyway, just because, again, training camp and the regular season are not the same thing. Now,
those 50-1 Chris Jones for defensive player of the year bets seemed so smart at the time.
Yep, they really did. So I did 5.
Can I stay at your house?
Anytime.
Unless Chris Jones has 7 sacks on Sunday.
Anytime. Thank you. Just keep pushing that bet till the next week. I'll get you that. I'll get you that next week. Can I double down on the same?
That's right. That's what I'm doing. I'm going to go. Let's see what. I bet Frank Clark's at pretty good odds right now. I bet he has a good finish this season.
So I wrote 5 predictions as we are now reaching the midway point, which will be Sunday. 9 games in a 17 game season. Again, still weird to say. But look, one of my predictions is that number 3 passing option, he not walking through that door. Mm-hmm. So here's my paragraph in theathletic.com. Mecole Hardman does have the 3rd most receiving yards, 352, but a lot of his production has been a byproduct of short passes or touch passes from Mahomes behind the line of scrimmage while in jet motion to use his speed on the field's perimeter. Byron Pringle, a 4-year veteran, has had his moments, But he has struggled to get open. But he struggled to get open against the Giants. The biggest disappointment has been Josh Gordon, the fifth-year receiver who the Chiefs signed in late September. In four games, Gordon has recorded only one reception for 11 yards. In paragraph. I just want to be surprised at this point, Josh.
Yeah.
He's so physically gifted. Yeah. And unlike some other teams, you know, when we get to the middle of the season and further on, Andy Reid doesn't want to show us as much practice time, which is fine. He is prerogative. It's not the same that we would have gotten at training camp. And this is this is the difference where, hey, if I had watched him in late August and I had seen a full 2.5 hour practice, I'd have a better understanding. Again, not at game speed, but a better understanding of like, what is he physically capable of? I don't know. So I'm just hoping that I'm surprised when the football arrives to Josh Gordon's hands.
Mm.
Now, you may be more optimistic than me, but that's probably where I am, where at least I am more consistent. At least I have a reliability when it comes to Mecole Hardman's production. I have an idea of what that looks like now, even though I thought it would maybe, you know, slightly more different or some version of what Sammy Watkins used to do, or at least he used to provide in terms of making the defense honor the middle of the field at every level, short, intermediate, and deep. As I said, look, Byron Pringle's had his moments. There's been times where he has been open. Now, it hadn't really gone that well since Tennessee and New York. But we know when he gets the ball in his hands, he can actually do something. He can actually make a guy miss. He is physically gifted. He did show some nice breakaway speed against the Ravens. Four games, man. I don't really know with Josh. And I wonder if the Chiefs are quietly starting to say that to themselves.
Two things. One, a PSA here. If you want to read the rest of that article from Nate, this is a rare occasion when you don't even have to be subscribed to The Athletic to check it out. It is a part of The Athletic's midseason NFL report, which is unlocked for everyone due to our great friends at State Farm. I feel bad that they're not getting the game they wanted with Chiefs-Packers this week, but they are giving you the content that you want. So you can go read that those midseason predictions from Nate, regardless of if you subscribe or not. Secondarily, PSA in the rear view there, do you have a theory as to why the Chiefs might be at that point with Gordon, or what it is that has limited him so much so far? Because he hasn't gotten less physical, right?
Like, no, right.
What is the one thing that's hampering that still in your eyes?
Yeah,
or maybe it's more than one.
Yeah, it's more than one thing. Part of it is, the chemistry between him and Mahomes is still a work in progress. You can see that, especially when plays break down, which I mentioned last episode. Now the Chiefs have been in the red zone, and I feel like Monday's game against the Jacks was the first time that, like, okay, Josh is running routes in the red zone as a big body, and it was there. And Mahomes, as he mentioned, just missed him, you know? Against Washington, there was a time where I think they designed a slant for him, and it just wasn't there. Which, again, kind of hard to say when you're bigger than the DB covering you.
Yeah.
I really haven't seen Josh run deep routes that well. And so I think each week the coaches, maybe the players themselves, obviously they're incorporated in this game plan as well, are trying to figure out what fits. Obviously, we've talked about two high safeties a ton. You know, they, I think, have wisely started, at least this was Sunday, Monday against the Giants. They wisely did something they did similar to the Eagles, where they just said, hey, Tyree Hill, crossers, deep ends, deep comebacks, like things that are obviously designed against either too high man or too high zone. Problem with that is now Josh Gordon is maybe on the outside, or he's not occupying the space that I thought he would. Because when he's originally signed, I was of the opinion, and talking to a few people, that, hey, maybe you put him in the slot, work the middle of the field, similar to what Sammy Watkins used to do with Travis Kelce. And that's what made it so hard, was that like one of those dudes is going to be open as long as the protection holds up. I don't know. I mean, it's so many things. And one of the things that I think people don't really, maybe they haven't thought about a ton, is Josh needed some real positive. So he needed something positive to happen much sooner than it has now. Mm. And so I thought they would have schemed things up in a way to get him an easy completion, an easy 2 for 24, you know, doesn't look great on the stat sheet, but hey, it's something to then obviously build on as the season goes along. You know, the big risk in all of this was, A, can Josh Gordon make it to the end of the year because of his issues that are not football related specifically? Mm-hmm. And B, well, if he is going to make it to the end of the year, will he be a fully formed complementary player, i.e. the number three option, by the playoffs? Well, this is slower than we thought. And I thought the fastest way to speed that up was get him that 2 for 24. Let him touch the ball. Let him get hit. And though his one reception kind of came on a scramble, Mahomes, like, he's big and he's tall, and let me just throw this thing up. And give credit to him, he caught it against the Buffalo Bills. But since then, slow start in Tennessee. Yes, Mahomes. It's just weird. Again, the receiver needs to be well serviced by the quarterback. So the last two targets, I believe, are Mahomes scrambling out of a pocket way too early against Tennessee, and then's like, well, he's down there. Hell, I'm going to fling it. And give credit to the linebacker who just physically out-muscled Josh Gordon to deflect the pass that was eventually picked off. And then Monday night, he's not wide open, but based on his size, he's open. And the quarterback hit Jerick McKinnon in the face mask. Mm-hmm. So you need better quarterback play also for maybe the 2 to 24 to like go from 4 to like 51 to go to like 6 to like 73. All you're asking Josh Gordon, I think, in a playoff game, if we even get there, is 6 catches for 73 yards. Maybe a couple first downs, obviously. Don't even need a touchdown. Just, can you help matriculate the ball down the field? Can you help the defense stay honorable and allow Tyreek Hill to run deeper routes? Because somebody's got to open that up. And unfortunately, Byron Pringle can't do that. And Mecole Hardman is still the player that you're comfortable with showing the defense closer to the line of scrimmage than past it.
I can't wait to get super excited whenever the Browns eventually cut Odell Beckham, and then that also won't work, but would still just be really exciting for like 3 days. I'm sold on that already. don't want his contract, but you know, if they cut him,
yeah,
you know, uh-huh. I'd be intrigued. Real quick here, last thing on the injury front, all the reports just came out from the Chiefs. Everyone was a full participant today who's on the active roster, except for Mike Remmers, although Dan Brown just has some little dashes down there after a DNP yesterday. So I don't know.
I think he was taking his physical yesterday as part of like traveling from New York to Kansas City. So
yesterday he didn't practice.
Yes.
Today there's just little dashes there. So I don't know what that means. But yeah, anyway.
I would assume that means he's full without an injury designation, even though he's technically on the injury report, is my understanding of that.
Yeah, under injury, it's got NIR, not injury related, and then travel. So maybe he was actually practicing today. So Mike Remmers not practicing again. Seems like Lucas Niang will probably start at right tackle again, which was crazy because that switch got made 3 weeks ago, 2 games worth right there for Remmers, right? And now Niang's back. So, you know, good to have some offensive line depth for that reason.
Yep.
Okay, give me a score because we have to do that, I think, and this game is weird.
Chiefs 27, Packers, I'll give them 24. I mean, it's probably going to be tighter than you expect, but I think the Chiefs should win. And because of the statistic you mentioned earlier, Josh, about what the Packers defense has done, it would be slightly unusual if they got blown out.
Yeah. Chiefs -7.5 seems
way too high.
Crazy to me. Seems insane.
Now, what you can't account for, because it's a quarterback in year 2 in his first career start, is a pick six.
Right?
That's what you
pick six.
That's what you can't account for. And I always wonder with these type of lines with Vegas, like, is that something you can equate to as like a 4-point, 3-point swing? Like, mm-hmm. I think this line should probably, in my opinion, be 3.5 because the Packers are good and yeah. the quarterback is immensely, incredibly gifted and like Hall of Fame first ballot. But the other guy is a first round draft pick who, you know, has had a year and a half to get ready for this moment. But again, you never know when that pick six might be coming. And if you're a Chiefs fan, you hope that happens, you know, at some point in the game on Sunday.
I think I said yesterday, 30-27. I think 30 points wins the game. I do think that's probably the case. I also saw, not to just make this a gambling advice show, because you should not be taking my sports betting advice anyway. But I saw also the over-under for Packers points was 19.5. That also seems too low.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to just pick a thing, that was my prop bet choice of the week in terms of, and, like, that seems, that stands out a little bit.
Josh, just remind the people, how many points did the Giants score?
It's 17.
Could have had more, you know, if Joe Judge, you know.
Was a grown-up?
Had a backbone.
If Joe Judge had a working headset and a backbone... Just ask him. The first one was way more important.
So here, this is where the box score kind of lies to you. So
yes.
I would agree with you. 19.5 seems to be there for the taking. Because look, even if he throws a pick six, well, guess what, boys? We're right back on the field.
Devontae, go. Devontae Adams is going to have 47 receptions. I don't know what his over-under is, but take the over on that also. The over-under would break the NFL record, you're telling me? Over, baby. Congratulations if you have Devontae Adams in a PPR league, because I don't know how many yards he's going to have, but he's going to have 40 catches. Okay, that's it. That's the show. If you want to go see anything that Seth has done but hasn't said on the show today, you can do that at mnchiefsfan.substack.com. And again, unlocked for everybody at The Athletic. You can go get Nate's midseason predictions for the Chiefs. He mentioned earlier, you said the phrase postseason, if that happens. Does Nate think that's going to happen? That's one way or another, that's one of the predictions in the piece. So you can go check that out for yourself. And you can follow all of us on Twitter at RealMNChiefsFan for Seth, at by Nate Taylor, obviously for Nate. I am at JB Briscoe. Also, soonish, going to have something with Jamal Charles that'll go out. Talked to him this morning. And it was a good time. I got to do some video editing. I got to do a whole lot of stuff before that sees the light of day. But before too long, a little something else there that I'll put out. So that's it. That's the show. Enjoy the State Farm Bowl. Maybe we can get Jordan Love. Oh my God. Can you imagine how pissed Aaron Rodgers would be if Jordan Love started getting State Farm commercials after this? Holy
Don't let him walk out of Arrowhead with a victory.
Oh, my goodness.
Classic case.
We didn't even talk about the fact that Aaron Rodgers isn't playing because he got immunized, quote unquote, in Canada. And the NFL was like, nah, man, that's not the rule. That's not the same thing. Whatever you're trying out here is not the same thing. And apparently Shailene Woodley likes to make her own medicines, which is crazy because she's not a doctor.
to have a nice dinner with those two.
They seem like they could be lovely. They seem like it.
I'm just saying the whole
nightmare.
The whole thing would be fascinating. Now,
absolutely.
Since we're at the end of the show, I'm just going to remind Chiefs fans, Aaron Rodgers will be y'all on Sunday. He will 100% be like, hey, it'd be great if we won a 10-9 game. It would also be great if, like, the Chiefs won to Josh's prediction, 30-27, because... Oh, shucks, if they only had me. So, you won't see him. You probably won't hear him. But I think Aaron Rodgers is like, if I can't beat Patrick Mahomes, why would I want you to beat Patrick Mahomes? I didn't even want them to draft you. So, just keep that in mind when you watch Sunday's game. Somewhere in the great distance... Aaron Rodgers will quietly, might be, perhaps, occasionally rooting for the Chiefs.
That's so cynical, Nate. I bet he loves Jordan Love like a brother.
Sure.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.